We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome to Overnight America at 8 o'clock. Hey, how about that? New time for the show. Feel pretty good. The number one question I get about moving to 8 o'clock is, are you still going to call it Overnight America? Because it's technically not overnight anymore. Yes, I am going to call it Overnight America. You want to know why? It's impossible for me to start a show any other way. Impossible. Not going to happen. So if you're wondering, oh, wait a minute, you're checking your watch. You have a pocket watch. You pulled it out, taking the bifocals down. Oh, this doesn't look like it's 10 o'clock at night. No, it's not. It's actually 8 o'clock. So Overnight America through the rest of the year into the start of next year will be at 8 instead of 10, which I'm pretty excited for. So we get to start the show a little bit early. It means that we're going to go from 8 p.m. to midnight. And if you are a regular listener after midnight, in fact, you may be listening right now after midnight. You may be a time traveler. No, we're going to replay the first couple hours of the show after midnight. So if you're used to listening at that point, you can continue to listen at that point. So technically, we're going to have 6 hours of Overnight America every night. And it's overnight somewhere. And I've already realized some of the changes in my life that are about to happen. Number one, when I drive into work normally, when the show starts at 10 o'clock, I didn't have to fight traffic. Now I have to fight traffic. I forgot what it was like to be packed in and trying to edge your way and make sure you can get through without getting too jammed up in St. Louis traffic. Number two, I look out the window here and I witness someone driving the wrong way on this side street. Is this Pine? I think that's Pine. And then someone hops out, grabs one of those Lime scooters, throws it in the back of their trunk. They continue to drive the wrong way on Pine while the back trunk is flopping up and down, just going. Now, some may say they're going to take it and charge it. I don't believe that. I believe they're just stealing it for something. If you've done that before, you would secure the latch or you would at least find a way to fit that in your trunk, right? Come on. If you've done this before, you know you're not going to be bouncing around with your back trunk open to your car. So I did get to witness that. That was kind of fun. And then I learn some of the different etiquette that goes around to any office. Not every office is the same. But when I'm here at night, I don't have to worry about the office etiquette. No one's around. I get the whole place to myself. Normally, there is one person in the newsroom, and that is the evening newscaster, Alex Degman. And normally there's someone here in the studio, let it be producer Mike, or let it be Chris Raby, who's doing sports or whatnot. And that's about it. You could walk around everywhere else, and the only other time you see someone is when the cleaning crew shows up to start taking the trash out and, you know, cleaning up our messes. So I'm used to just being able to have the whole place. I'm like the king of the place at night when no one's around. Isn't that right? Don't give me that look. He's not buying it. Producer Mike's not buying it. But what I learned very quickly was when you're around in the office with everyone else, there's consequences to your actions. You can't just act the way you would normally act. So here's what happened. I come in and there is a pot of coffee made, a Kevin Colleen pot of coffee, which is nice. And I think, oh, this is wonderful. So I pull up a little pot of coffee and I get my regular cup and then I go get a second cup. And the next thing I know, producer Mike's on me. You know what he says? He says, did you not make another pot of coffee? You're like, I don't know. I just poured coffee into my cup. All of a sudden, now since I'm around other people, it's my responsibility to fill the coffee every time I'm here. Now, when I'm here alone, I make a pot of coffee first thing, and then I have the coffee to drink it. But when I'm pulling from someone else's pot, is it my responsibility to go in and then replenish it just because I used it? I don't think it is. Now, let's say this hypothetical question. Let's say you made the pot of coffee. And you set it and forget it, and you go back, and you find that you take the last cup of the pot you just made. I think you have zero moral obligation to make a new pot of coffee. But these are the things I have to learn again. Now I have to work with other people, and where are we? If you're not used to hearing a live talk show that's non-sports at this time, I want to welcome you in. We'll have fun on the show. Maybe I should describe what this show's about. Number one, I complain about coffee pots at least once a day. So get used to coffee pot talk. That happens a lot. That's a joke. We have sarcasm. We have discussions. We talk just about everything. If it's in the news, we'll talk about it. If it's political, we'll talk about it. If it's interesting, we'll talk about it. So let me tell you about some of our guests that are going to join us live. We actually have a guest, Chris Edmond, is going to be joining us at 8:30, so in about 20 minutes from now. And he has a book about his dad that just came out, a World War II hero. He was a prisoner of war during World War II. He was in a Nazi camp. And some of the things he did earned him a lot of accolade here in the United States. He saved a lot of lives while he was taken as prisoner. And I wanted to have his story told, and his son Chris is going to join us to tell that story. Next hour, we're going to have our friend Jane Blasio on. And Jane is going to be someone that is hosting three nights of shows on the TLC network. And it's a show called Taken at Birth. I want you to imagine you finding out that you were adopted, okay, at a young age, which isn't a big deal. But then you find out you were adopted under the circumstance that you were stolen from your family and then adopted out to a wealthy family who purchased you. It's a little bit something, isn't it? So there's a story down south, and this happened to many, many, many children. They would either at the hospital lie to the mothers and say your child died and we're sorry, but, you know, your child's no longer alive. And what was happening were there were people that were collecting children and selling them to people that wanted to adopt these children. There were kids being kidnapped, and then adopted out. There's these agencies that were selling these kids. She found out she was one of those kids. So she grew up knowing she was adopted, but she didn't realize the circumstances of it. TLC is doing a special for the next three nights, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night, reuniting some of the kids with their biological parents. What a fascinating story. So we're going to talk to Jane in the next hour about that too. I got a lot on the show that I want to get to, but if you want to text the show, maybe it's important that if you want to talk and communicate, this is how you do it. You can either call or text 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Still dark out, so we know the power of KMOX reaching all across the United States. And I'm looking forward to having this 8 o'clock audience that's going to be able to participate in the show. Feel free to call in if you want to text in. We have producer Mike in the other room. You'll talk to him first. He's pretty friendly. But if you just want to call and ask for your horoscope, he's not going to be able to help you with that. But if you want to join in or talk about anything, part of what I need to figure out is how we're going to address this show. What kind of things are we going to talk about? Do we need to do a state of the show? Do we need to talk about what to anticipate, what to expect with the show? That could be a part of what we need to do too. So maybe we'll do that next. And I got a lot more to get to on Overnight America, KMOX.
St. Louis's traffic station, KMOX. Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
I had one other guest that's going to join us later in the show. His name is Josh Campbell. And he was in the FBI when they investigated Hillary Clinton and also the Russian investigation. So what was going on in the background of that? You know what they called the Russian investigation, what the FBI code name was? Crossfire Hurricane. It's a good name. It's a real good name. So we're going to get some insights into what was going on behind the scenes of that investigation later in the show, too. I'm really looking forward to that. 436-7900. Is the number here. Also 800-925-1120. Live, it's 8:19 p.m. in St. Louis, Missouri. Unless you're listening to the replay of this, which happens sometime after midnight, we're happy that everyone is joining us on Overnight America at our new time. I'm really looking forward to it. Terry calling in from St. Louis. Hey, Terry.
Hey.
How
Hi,
are
Brian.
You? Hi, what's going on?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
Hey, you know, I've called and I've talked to you several times.
Mm-hmm.
But I just heard your, I'm kind of pretty excited that you have an earlier segment.
Oh, all right. Why? Why? Is it better with the schedule?
Yeah. I mean, because half the time I'm either sleeping or getting ready to, go to sleep or whatever. But I truly enjoy your show. But I just kind of wanted to touch on some of the things that you had said in the beginning, and I thought that was kind of funny.
Okay, so go ahead.
The scooters.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw someone grabbing one.
You're pretty sure you're right.
What do you see that downtown in St. Louis? People grabbing those scooters.
Yes, I've actually the other day I was sitting by Keener Plaza and witnessed a car with. His entire car all his windows were open, his trunk was open, scooters were hanging out everywhere.
Wow, how about that? Now, producer Mike mentioned that they may be taking them to charge them, but I'm getting the impression of what I witnessed was not one of those instances, because the person just threw it in the back of the trunk. They were going the wrong way on Pine, and they didn't secure anything down. That back tailgate was just bouncing up and down. So that didn't look like the person knew what they were doing.
And you're probably right. There are a lot of people that do steal those, and I'm not quite sure what they're gaining by that, but I think they're just being destructive, and being ornery. But there are many people that do charge them. Those are the ones that have the car. They have they're the ones that ride them double down the road.
I got a question for you, Terry. I'm going to change the topic real quick.
Sure.
Now, did you call into the show before, and did you say you lived on the street for a while?
For quite some time, yes.
Quite some time.
I did.
How you doing now?
I'm doing okay.
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 Are you off the street?
Yeah. I am, but, I mean, it kind of goes more in detail. I was put into a place where there's a bunch of rats. Mm. And this is a true story. And I now am being, put back on the street because I don't want to, I can't sleep there. All my things have been shredded and eaten, and I can't keep food out. And so it's a shame.
Well, but, who put you into a place with a bunch of rats? What was the circumstance?
I was granted housing, mm-hmm. And I was given a place. I didn't really have a lot of. You have 1 month to find a place, mm-hmm. which is not much time. So there are few and far between. There are select few that. Landlords that accept all of these vouchers. And so I complained about what was happening, and I have evidence. However, it's not, it's not being heard. And now I have a hearing, and now my voucher is being taken away. And so now I'm going to be back on the streets here in a couple of weeks.
Wait, so do you believe it's a situation where the landlord or the owner of the property believes, well, go ahead and complain, but you're going to live life on the street again, so no reason to complain?
He, as a matter of fact, yes, he did tell me. He told me that exactly.
You can't do that. You can't do that.
No. So, I mean, but they can, because they know that we don't have the money to fight it. So, But it's an unfortunate situation. But yes.
Well, who comes up with the funding for this? Is it a charity or is it the city that gives you the ability to use this voucher for housing?
Well, I can tell you exactly. It's there are different what do you call them?
Just like,
I can't think of the word I'm looking for.
Is it groups or organizations or is it?
Yeah, different organizations that and mine is it's called Shelter Plus Care. Mm-hmm. And that's who I got the voucher through, and then it's through St. Patrick's.
Yeah. Okay.
So
are you in this place
it's
now?
Unfortunate.
Are you out now?
I'm not staying there. I'm basically sleeping on the street and staying at a couple of friends' house, and I'm not going to stay there. I can't sleep with varmints, with rodents.
Is the whole property, the whole place? Just infested? I mean, are there other tenants on this property?
Yeah, it's a fourplex. And the two tenants that when I first moved in, they both moved out. And they told me the same exact thing. They were moving out for that reason. The neighbor next to me said that he has a cat. Mm-hmm. So I don't like cats. So, you know, I mean.
So he gets a cat to take care of the mouses and rats and things that are there.
Yeah, and they're not mice. They've eaten through they've eaten through bowls and eaten through peanut butter jar lids, like the red lids. I mean, that's serious stuff. And they've shredded everything. They've eaten everything. So
can't you just call like a city inspector or someone to look at this and condemn the place?
Yes, I probably could. Sometimes you kind of get discouraged.
You know, I think they may be playing off the idea that you're going to be there temporary and they just want to get that voucher money, and then they'll put someone else in, get that voucher money, put someone else in. You know, you might as well call them out on it, because that's not proper. You can't have living conditions where there's rats and you have to contend with something like that. You should call someone on it. And, you know, you got nothing to lose at this point if you still have the place until, what, the end of the month or whatever, and then you find out that, just have them make it honest. Have them mm-hmm. Fix things up, and maybe it'll improve the life
just
of the other
next
people
person.
There. Yeah, you know, just make them do that. I mean, if they're accepting money, they can't bring it to you in that condition.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the thing. They know that it's guaranteed money. It is. It's guaranteed money for them, so they're just like, you know, they don't have to come fix anything if they don't want to or whatever. You know what I mean? So they're getting their rent. And they can get away with it, and because it's unfortunate, but I'm not in the place where I can fight that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, but you got a phone, and you can call the city, and you can say that there is a
boyfriend situation. Does, I don't.
Okay. Well, you can make the call, and that could be part of it. And just the call itself and the complaint itself should at least warrant some concern. Maybe they'll have someone out there to check it out. And do you still have keys to this place?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Then
you can for much longer.
Yeah, you can grant them access. Tell them, hey, I have keys up until this date. I'll grant you access. Come and take a look. It won't be a problem for them to come in and inspect. So give it a try.
Right.
All right, Terry. Okay. Well, good luck. Thank you for checking in.
And hey, if you empty a pot, make a pot.
All right. Thanks, Terry.
Very good to talk to you. Thank you for talking to me.
All right. Bye. All right. So if I empty a pot of coffee, I have to fill that pot of coffee. I think I'm under no obligation, if I made the pot of coffee, to fill it. Now, in this instance, I didn't actually make it. But then again, I didn't take the last drop either. We have these pumps, so you can't really gauge how much is left in there. You've seen the ones that are just open air, where you stick the glass coffee pot underneath it, the drip, 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 and it gets down, and then it fills the coffee pot up. So you can tell when the thing's about empty. These are pumps, so it fills into this giant thermal container, and then you put the latch tap or the top on it, and then you pump the coffee out of it, so you can't tell how much is left. So if someone else comes after me, and then they get the dreaded air pumping out of it, I have no way of telling that sort of thing. Again, I'm still relearning some of those different etiquettes and procedures that are necessary when you're working in an office with other people around, albeit limited, but I'm still having to learn over again. Our guest Chris Edmonds is going to join us live next. And one of the nice things about doing the show now at 8 o'clock is that if you have the opportunity to ask questions, you can. If you want to text in a question, you can. But Chris Edmonds, his father was someone that was captured during World War II. And some of the different stories that emerged about his heroics during that time are pretty remarkable. And I wanted him to share that story. Little inspirational here. Let me give you the texting number if you have any questions you want me to ask him. It's 314-436-7900. He comes up next on Overnight America KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Overnight America, we're happy to have really our first guest on the radio program since we moved to 8 o'clock. This is kind of cool. Gives us the opportunity to have a nice conversation with Chris Edmonds. And he has a book out that talks about his dad. It's kind of cool when you go back and research and learn some pretty extraordinary things that family members have been a part of. And this book is called No Surrender, A Father, A Son, in an Extraordinary Act of Heroism That Continues to Live On Today. Chris Edmonds, thank you for coming on to Overnight America.
Thank you, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be with you at KMOX. Thank you for having me.
You know, at this time of night, I'm sure you can actually listen to us on 1120 AM. We still reach out that far, which is pretty neat.
Absolutely.
So are you in Tennessee?
I live in Tennessee, Maryville, Tennessee, just outside of Knoxville, but I'm actually in New York tonight.
Oh, I see. You wrote this book about your father. In World War II, he was taken prisoner. I wanted to kind of get a understanding of the background of this book, what really gave you the motivation to write this about your dad. And before you started the research, what did you know about your dad's life?
Well, before I started the research, I knew, you know, I'm kind of ashamed. I knew very little about his life. He kind of lived a lifetime before I was ever born. He was born in 1919, and he grew up, you know, by the age of 10, he had lost his mom. She died at age 3. He had moved in with his aunt and was raised by her. And then he suffered through the Depression at age 10 and on. And then he did well in school and graduated high school in 38 and went on to worked a couple of years, but then decided to join the Army before Pearl Harbor. I didn't know any of that, really, to be honest with you. I think I knew that my grandmother had passed away when he was very young. But I knew that he'd been in the Army in World War II, knew that he had risen to the rank of Master Sergeant, because I wore his shirt around in the neighborhood when we played Army. I would wear his Army shirt around. I was kind of one of the cool kids because I got to wear his shirt. But
so you were born
captured in the Battle of the Bulge.
So you were born before he left for the service.
No, I was born way after.
Way after. Okay.
Yeah. He got out of he was discharged from World War II in 45. Then he was called back up to Korea in 50. Stayed in the service till 53, and then he met my mom. And then my older brother was born, and then I was born in 57.
I see.
So he literally did live a lifetime before I was ever born. I didn't know a lot about it. He never talked about it, so I didn't know a lot about it.
That's kind of common, though, isn't it, with a lot of the vets of that era? They don't want to talk about it. And even to this day, you find veterans that have served, they just don't want to talk about it.
It's very typical. Many of the men that I ended up connecting with and interviewing and really growing close to through this story and this journey were all the same. They never told their children much, but when their grandchildren got old enough to ask them questions, that's when they started opening up a little. I don't know if it was just because a lot of time had passed or they could say no to their precious grandchildren. But when Dad was Dad died the same year, just after my twin daughters were born. And my oldest daughter was 3, so my twins were 6 and a half months when he died.
Wow.
So they never had a chance to ask him any questions.
Your dad was your hero, was growing up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's a great dad. You know, he was involved in, even though he was older when I was born, he was 39 when I was born. He was involved in everything we did as children. He was involved with the school. He helped coach our baseball teams. He was involved with the scouts with us.
Yeah.
He was a great dad.
And part of this that plays into it is that they just don't talk about some of the different things that happened in the war. So you wouldn't know. It's not like Thanksgiving meal. You'd sit down, the family would get together, and you'd hear the same stories over again. It's not one of those things that would really be mentioned. So you have to dig in and you could do some research. And the things that you found out about your dad, some of the things that you couldn't believe that he was a part of, what were some of those things?
Well, before he joined the service, I didn't know that he had, been a part of the junior ROTC program at Knoxville High School from the time he was a freshman on to his senior year. He participated. It was one of the strongest programs in the Southeast. They actually had a firing range on the top floor of the high school. And that's where he learned to shoot a rifle. Yeah, I mean,
top floor of the high school, there's a shooting range.
What? Yeah, you think about that in today's day and age, that's not going to happen. But back then, again, that was one of the many, many students in the high school were part of the junior ROTC program.
You know, when he was in World War II, was he captured?
Yes. What? Yeah, he was captured during the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah. So what were the circumstances around that? What happened?
Well, obviously, he was a part of the 422nd Regiment of the 106th Infantry, and they were at kind of at the tip of the spear where Hitler and the Nazis came through. They brought hundreds of thousands of troops through with thousands of pieces of armament and just overwhelmed the Allied forces, and they came right through where Dad was. And so on December 10th, they arrived on December 10th of 1944, and they took over. They set up shop basically and took over for the Second Division, and they were spread very thin across that front right there on the German lines. And then on December 16th is when the war came to them, and it was just an incredible bombardment and just overwhelming forces that came. But Dad and his men and others who were part of the 28th Division as well, they fought valiantly. The 424th, the 423rd regiments, even though they were so overwhelmed, they fought valiantly and held held the enemy back for 3 days. And on December 19th, Dad was ultimately captured along with his men. And then they were sent deeper into Germany. They were put on a forced march through Germany, a kind of a death march to the first rail station that they arrived in, Gerolstein, then placed on trains and taken deeper into Germany. And wow, that's what began their POW experience.
A Nazi POW camp. Wow. And
yeah,
that's,
he was actually in two camps. So
wow.
It was a horrible experience.
Oh, but some of the things that happened inside of that camp that you learned about, I wanted to have you share that story because it's pretty remarkable.
Okay.
I don't know how some of these things, you think about today's generation, they want to stop talking about the experiences like this. You know, they'll take a picture of their lunch and they won't stop bragging about how good their lunch looked for 5 weeks. You know, and today you find you have to go back decades to find out some of the most remarkable acts of heroism that your father was a part of during the war. And it's a good thing you did it. There's a lot of war stories that haven't been documented over the years. People have said, and it's a pretty true statement, they were more concerned with winning the war than they were when it comes to record keeping. So when you start to go back and talk to some of these veterans and the ones that have opened up and told these stories, they're pretty remarkable stories to be shared. So I'm glad you're doing that here today. Can you hold on for the next break?
Yes, I'd love absolutely.
I want to continue our story with Chris Edmonds, who's joining us live on Overnight America. His book's called No Surrender, A Father, A Son, in an Extraordinary Act of Heroism That Continues to Live On Today. And when we come back, I wanted to pick the story back up. His father being marched deeper into Germany in a Nazi prison camp. What happens after that moment? This is Overnight America, KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Thanks for checking out the very first 8 o'clock start of Overnight America. That's pretty exciting. And I wanted to welcome our guest back in, Chris Edmonds, who is in Tennessee, and his book's called No Surrender, A Father, A Son, An Extraordinary Act of Heroism That Continues to Live On Today. Chris, again, thank you for coming on live with us on KMOX.
Well, thank you, Ryan. It's a pleasure.
So if people wanted to check your book out, No Surrender, where can they find it?
They can go to nosurrenderbook.com. There's links to all the major booksellers that are where the book's available, but there's also lots of pictures that are not in the book.
Oh, okay.
There's also a reading guide for readers. So the book will also come out. Today was the launch day, so it's on the shelves. It's out in the stores and in the airports, wherever they sell books. Mm. There's also a young reader's edition that will be coming out next week.
No,
so we're real excited about that.
No Surrender is the name of the book you can look up. And you talk about your dad, Roddy, and right before the break, we were at the point where you were doing the research and you learned that when he was captured during World War II, escorted onto a train deep into Germany, into a Nazi prison camp. What happened? What happened after that point?
Well, they arrived at the first prison camp on December 25th, Christmas Day of 1944. And they spent approximately 30 days there where they, again, were starved. It was extreme starvation. They lived on less than 500 calories a day. And the men were losing on average a pound a day. At that camp, all the non-commissioned officers on January 25th of 1945 were transferred out, including the Jewish men who had been segregated in that camp. The Jewish American GIs had been segregated upon threat of being shot if they didn't report that they were Jewish, and put in a prison within the prison. Is what Lester Tanner, one of the veterans who was in that camp, told me. So they were all transferred to a new camp called Ziegenhain. It was Stalag 9A, and they arrived there on the 25th of January, 1945. And it's amazing and even brutal that the Nazis had strict anti-Jew policies in the POW camps, where it was their intention and their practice to segregate Jewish POWs from non-Jews and send them to certain death in murderous labor camps. And that's what they were doing.
Your father did something about that, didn't he?
Yes. Late on the evening of January 26, German officers announced over the loudspeaker and sent orders to my father, because in this camp, for the first time, Dad was in complete command. He was the ranking American soldier in the camp. And so they sent orders to Dad, announced over the loudspeaker of the American Quadrant, said that the following morning, only the Jewish soldiers were to report outside for the next morning's roll call. All who disobeyed would be shot. That was the same orders they'd received at the first camp. Lester said, your father being in charge did not hesitate. So without hesitation, your dad turned to his men and he said, we're not doing that. Tomorrow we all fall out. And he sent orders to all the other barracks to fall out. And that's what they did. On that morning, it was January 27th, 1945. It was bitterly cold, one of the worst winters on record in Germany. And as the Nazi commander approached, a Major Siegmann from high command, he wasn't the commandant. He had come in especially to take the Jewish men away. He couldn't believe his eyes. Because what he saw standing before him were all the Americans, nearly 1,300 soldiers, and they all were standing in sharp formation. And the German was angry. He stormed over to my father, got up in his face, and I can't tell you all the conversation that went on. We don't have time, but basically he said, they can't all be Jews, to which my father declared, we are all Jews here. And the Nazi major turned blood red. He lunged forward. He pressed his pistol hard into my dad's forehead. And he screamed at my father, one last chance. Sergeant, you will order the Jews to step forward or I will shoot you right now. And, you know, by this point, Dad and his men had seen untold horrors with the brutal battle of the Bulge. 89,000 men were killed, captured, or wounded, a death march, like I had mentioned earlier. They had been bombed, left for dead in boxcars in Limburg rail yard, and the British bombed them. 40 days of starvation. They'd been beaten, stripped of their dignity. They all stood, and Dad stood strong and fearless.
Wow. What happened?
Well, I won't tell you to read the book. No, I'll tell you what happened.
I understand. The important thing about No Surrender is this is just one of the many stories. If you find this fascinating, you got to get the book and check it out for yourself.
It's just one.
Yeah, but
and it's,
what happened,
it's not
though?
Just Dad's story.
Okay. I need to know what happened.
Lester Tanner, one of the witnesses, I just had dinner with him tonight here in New York. He's 96, still going strong. But he said, your father never wavered.
Awesome.
He said, I was amazed. He said, I was standing just to the back of your father on the right side. And I didn't know what the major was going to do. But he said, then your father, he said, he spoke again courageously. And he said, he spoke with such authority. He said, Major, you can shoot me, but you will have to kill all of us.
Wow.
Because we know who you are, and you'll be tried for war crimes when we win this war. And then he added this, and you will pay.
Wow. Wow.
And Lester said, I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Your father.
And he said,
Roddy Edmonds, an all-American hero there. He was even honored by Israel many years later for his heroics and how he stood up for the Jews during World War II. Just for the sake of time, Chris, if people wanted to check out the book, that is just one of the many great stories in it. What's your website again?
NoSurrenderBook.com. Yeah. NoSurrenderBook.com.
You can find it there now, out in the book. Pretty remarkable. No Surrender, A Father, A Son, and the Extraordinary Act of Heroism That Continues to Live On Today. Chris Edmonds, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Ryan, thank you for having me.
What a remarkable story. I hope you enjoyed that. And by the way, he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. One of the nice things is the amount of stories we can tell on this radio program, and I hope to share a lot of those stories. I got chills hearing that story. You know, coming up next, we have another guest, Jane Blasio, and she's going to be the host of a new special on TLC the next couple of days, Taken at Birth. You imagine being taken away from your biological family at birth? She's got a story, too, coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.